Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. For over 1,000 years after the church's founding, a key doctrine was lost, one that gives hope to the hopeless and life to the spiritually dead. That doctrine is justification by faith, rediscovered by Martin Luther in the 1500s. Today, what justification means. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Now, Erwin Lutzer continues a series on the power of a clear conscience. We've come to our 7th message, one in which we find the secret of being forgiven forever.
If you're here today and you're of the Catholic faith, I hope that you have a sense of humor. I believe that you do. I'm counting on it. There is a story that when the last pope died, he took all of his keys and attempted to open the door of heaven. He tried every key and it didn't work. In fact, he tried all of his keys a second time. Suddenly, a shadowy figure arrived and was there and said to the pope, what's going on? He said, well, I'm the pope. I have the keys to the kingdom. I have the keys to paradise, but they're not working. The guy said, well, you have to understand something. 500 years ago, a guy by the name of Martin Luther came up here and he changed the locks. Now, just to clarify a little bit of theology, neither Luther nor the Pope have the keys to heaven. They are held by Jesus, the Bible says in the book of Revelation 1:18. But whether you are today here as a Buddhist, as a Muslim, no matter what religion you belong to, or a Catholic or a Protestant, you're all welcome. And all of us should appreciate the struggle of conscience that Martin Luther experienced. This happens to be the 7th in a series of messages entitled The Power of a Clear Conscience. And no one struggled with his conscience more than did Luther. In fact, he enrolled in the monastery in Erfurt to see whether or not he could quiet his tormented soul. Luther was afflicted by what is known in German as Anfechtungen, that is to say, a sense of existential despair, anxiety, guilt, an overwhelming feeling of inferiority, of imperfection. And his conscience haunted him, and he hoped that he'd be able to find peace. So there in the monastery in Erfurt, he took the time to try to take advantage of all the opportunities that medieval Catholicism gave him back in the year 1507 and 1508. And what he did is he began by the duties that were outlined that should be done. The renunciation of self-will, the idea of sleeping on a floor without a blanket. And Rebecca and I have been to these places many times. I've had the privilege of leading tours to the sites of the Reformation. And so there on a stone floor without a blanket to mortify the flesh. What he did is he took care and did all that he can regarding these disciplines. Sometimes he fasted so long and so much that some of his fellow monks thought that he would actually die. The problem was that there was never a balance. His account with God was never balanced. The more he did, the more he sensed God demanded, and his conscience continued to torment him. The sacraments were of some solace to him, especially confession. But he knew that he needed to confess all of his sins, and in order to jog his memory, what he did is he began by quoting the Ten Commandments and the 7 deadly sins. And then the confession started. Sometimes he confessed his sins for up to 6 hours at a time, until his confessor Staupitz said, Luther, why is it that you confess all of these little sins? The next time you come, let it be for murder or for immorality or theft, but not all these little peccadilloes, not all these little sins. But Luther was a better theologian than his contemporaries. He knew that the issue was not whether the sin was big or little, but whether or not it had been confessed and whether or not it had been forgiven. Because Luther knew, as moderns don't, that even the slightest sin, even the smallest smidgen of sin, will banish a sinner forever from the presence of God. And then in confession, he reached an impasse. Sins, in order to be forgiven, had to be confessed. In order for them to be confessed, they had to be remembered. If they were not remembered, they could not be confessed. And if they were not confessed, they could not be forgiven. And then he realized his situation was even worse than he thought. Indeed, all of his whole nature was corrupt. You see, it was as if he was trying to mop up the floor with a faucet running. No matter how often he confessed, tomorrow was a brand new day with new sins, and his conscience would not be silenced, and there was no peace. Staupitz suggested that Luther go to the little town of Wittenberg, where a university was being established by the Elector Frederick, and he should teach there, and Luther taught philosophy and ethics. And then Staupitz said to him one day, "Why don't you begin teaching the Bible?" And Luther said, "That will be the death of me." To some extent, it was. He began to lecture in the Psalms, and he comes to Psalm 22. "My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" The words of Jesus on the cross. So Luther said, "Why is it that Jesus Christ himself experienced Anfechtungen, a sense of disquiet, a torment of soul, a separation from God?" And then he began to realize that it was on our behalf that that happened. And then Luther came to Romans chapter 1 because he was lecturing on the book of Romans, where it says that the gospel is the power of God unto salvation, and in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, "The just shall live by faith." Oh, Luther hated the righteousness of God. Love God? Luther said, "I hate him." Because you see, it is because God is so righteous. That's our problem. If God were less righteous, and maybe he'd be able to bend his righteousness to accommodate us, then maybe all of my works and all of my confessions would be sufficient. But God is impeccably holy and righteous. But Luther began to understand that the text says that the just live by faith. And he began to see that righteousness is an attribute of God, but righteousness also is a gift that God gives to sinners. He came to Romans chapter 4, verse 3. "Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him for righteousness." Luther said, "Day and night I pondered the connection between the just shall live by faith and the righteousness of God." And then he said, "When I began to realize that righteousness is a gift that God gives, his very own righteousness to sinners as a gift by faith," he said, "it was as if I was walking through the gates of paradise." Now, it didn't matter how high God's standards were, as long as Jesus kept them for me and paid my debt, I can be free. I'm sure that Luther also lectured on 2 Corinthians 5:21. "For he that is God made him," Christ, "to be sin on our behalf, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him." Follow carefully. That verse teaches that Jesus got what he didn't deserve, namely our sin, and we get what we don't deserve. We get his righteousness. It's the great exchange. And by the way, no wonder when Jesus was made sin, the hymn writer described it this way: "Well might the sun in darkness hide and shut its glories in when Christ the great Redeemer died for man, the creature sin." With that introduction, I want you to turn to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8 is one of the greatest chapters in all the Bible. If the Bible were a ring, it would have many different stones, and the middle stone, the point of the diamond, if you please, would be Romans, the book of Romans, and then, of course, Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8 begins with, "There is therefore now no condemnation." It begins with no condemnation. Romans 8 then ends with no separation. Nothing shall separate us from the love of God. Death, persecution, dying a martyr, nothing separates us from God's love. But in between there, I want you to notice in verse 31 of Romans 8, what shall we say then to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? And that's a good question for you. If God is for us, who is bigger than God who could possibly be against us? He who spared not his own son, but gave him up for us all, how shall he not also with him graciously give us all things? Sorry, I have to skip that marvelous verse with all of its meaning. But now we're in verse 33. Who shall bring a charge against God's elect? It is God who justifies. Who is to condemn? Christ Jesus is the one who died. More than that, who is raised, who is at the right hand of God, interceding for us. So let's begin and answer the question. Who can bring a charge against God's elect? Well, in answer to that question, I can think of people who know me. They might be able to bring a charge against me. I'm thinking of Satan. There's no doubt that he's able to bring a charge against me. All of us, because we lack perfection and we sin, someone somewhere can bring a charge against us. But the good news there in Romans chapter 8 is that ultimately nobody can bring a charge against God's elect in God's presence, if God has chosen to justify us. Well, this is Pastor Lutzer, and of course, as you know, you're in a series of messages. You're listening to a series that is titled The Power of a Clear Conscience. The message that you are going to hear, you've heard part of it, and next time the message will continue, is incredibly important. It's the story, of course, of Martin Luther, but whether you are Lutheran or not, what we need to understand is his quest for salvation. The title of the entire series of messages is The Power of a Clear Conscience. And by the way, have you ever thought of how wonderful it would be to stand on Mars Hill where the Apostle Paul preached his famous sermon? Or to go to Corinth and there see the Bema seat, the judgment seat that is referred to in the book of Acts? And yes, you can go to ancient Corinth today and see the judgment seat. You can see where it was, and even the name is still there. And then go to Asia Minor, Turkey, and visit Ephesus and Smyrna and Sardis. Well, God willing, at the end of August, I'll be leading a tour to these places, a cruise. If you are interested, go to moodymedia.org, moodymedia.org. There'll be all the information you need. I hope you can join us.
Erwin Lutzer, introducing Forgiven Forever, the seventh in a 10-part series on the power of a clear conscience. Next time on Running to Win, more on why no one can bring a charge against God's elect. This series will be sent on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about the power of a clear conscience. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.